You're listening to Within Our Reach, a podcast by Reachability Association that focuses on accessibility, inclusion, and leveling the playing field at work and in your community. My name is Blake Hunsley, and my co-host is Shelley Allward-McLeod, and today we are joined by Reachability's Health and Wellness Coordinator, Chelsea Coffin. In this episode, we'll be discussing the role of educational program assistants in the Nova Scotia public school system. Enjoy the episode.
Welcome to the Within Reach podcast. I am one of your hosts, Blake Hunsley.
And I'm Shelley Allward-McLeod.
And today we have a very special guest with us. We have, well, we'll let you introduce yourself. Who are you? Who do we have?
Hello. Thank you for having me. My name is Chelsea Coffin, and I am the agency manager here at Reachability.
You sure are. And today you're talking to us about something you have a lot of experience with, EPAs in the education system.
Yes.
So first of all, for people who don't love it when we throw acronyms right at the start of the episode, what is an EPA?
An EPA is an educational program assistant.
Perfect. And so we should explain a bit too. So how do you have experience with educational programming assistants?
Yes. So I have an 11-year-old daughter who requires an EPA, has had an IEP. And for anybody that doesn't know what an IEP is, it's an individual education plan. Mm-hmm. She's had that since grade two in school. So I've been working with the Learning Center with EPAs for the majority of her life. She was born with microcephaly, which essentially means that her head is a lot smaller than the average child. And with that comes a smaller brain. And with that comes some intellectual barriers. Mm-hmm. She has a cognitive disability.
Right. Okay. So what sort of an impact does an EPA have for your daughter in her average day at school?
An EPA is a support for her. I could go on and on about our education system and how teachers operate in the classroom. Teachers are taught to teach neurotypical children. Mm-hmm. And in this day and age, we don't have a whole classroom full of neurotypical children. No. So the main priority for EPAs is to take those who are not neurotypical and help them through the tasks, the routines, the work that they need to get done on a daily basis.
Okay. So the reason we're bringing this up today, because we always tend to start an episode with an article for reference. Shelley, you've read the article for reference here. Did you want to give us a quick summary of the situation from last year?
Yeah. So, well, first off, this article is in relation to the fact that the educational program assistants were looking to go on strike. Mm-hmm. And so that was going to obviously cause some significant issues. The province made, you know, some statements about the fact that parents might have support. It might affect that. There was lots of might. Mm-hmm. Like, there was not like any definitive what we're going to do. And some families were, you know, left having to try to find somebody to support their child. That was going to be a very costly venture. All this, you know, to say that, kind of like, you know, tying into Chelsea's original comments about an EPA supposed to be a support system. You know, many years ago, right, the school system was created, okay, for just neurotypical, right? Mm-hmm. Like, children who had any deficit whatsoever weren't even welcome at school because mm-hmm. they couldn't be handled.
Yeah.
And, you know, so we've come a long way in the fact that, you know, schools are supposed to be inclusive. So we've added these learning centers. We've added these educational program assistants, which may be called educational assistants. Mm-hmm. In some school boards, even within Nova Scotia, they don't all have the same title. So that just goes to show you we're still not all on the same page in our own province, right? They have different names, but for the purposes of this EPA. And so that's, you know, so that we have come a long way, but we still have a long way to go because, again, even within our province, even within the HRCE, the Halifax Regional Center, there, not every school has access to the same thing. Not every school mm-hmm. has a full learning center, mm-hmm. right? They often will have maybe a teacher that's half learning center and half teaching, right? Meaning they're not 100% available, okay? So if there are EPAs, the EPA may not have access. There may not actually be a physical room called a learning center, right? So again, these are challenges, right, that we still have yet to overcome. So having said all that, I want to give a little bit of background for those people that might be watching that don't even understand what the process is, because I think it's always fair to talk about if we have made some improvements, but like everything, there's a lot more improvements to be made. And then I think that this article and the, you know, the looming strike or potential for strike really started to highlight the cracks in that foundation, because I don't think the average Nova Scotian realizes that the teachers aren't the only people in school. So it's the support staff. So while people are like, oh, well, school's still going to be continuing, right? Just because there's no EPAs, like the teachers can handle all that. But those are usually from people who don't have children that need to be supported by an EPA.
Right.
Which is a large number. Of people. So
There were 2,500 students supported by EPAs. And I think that was just, would that be just HRCE?
That's just HRC.
So that's just Halifax region. That is a significant number then. And I know a lot of the issue when this was, and we should mention too, for anyone who missed this story at the time, the strike was averted, thankfully. So we did avoid the situation kind of at the 11th hour. But there were schools where the principals were quoted as telling some parents, it's not safe for your child to attend if their EPA is on strike. Now, is that a situation that your daughter would have been in? Would it have been safe for her to attend without an EPA or possible or no?
It was. And they did go on strike for a little.
They did go on strike. I'd forgotten that.
So there were people left.
I think it was like a week or something. It was like one school week. I can't remember how many days, but you're right. Yes.
The strike did happen. Fortunately and unfortunately, it didn't impact my daughter a whole lot. but that's not her routine. I mean, everything within a school system is such a domino effect. You take one piece of the puzzle out and it's going to affect everybody else. Correct. So now she doesn't have her EPA. Now she's not going to the learning center. Now she's in the classroom with everybody else. And that's not what she's used to. Nor is the teacher used to that, which is just wild to me because that's her teacher. And her teacher isn't used to teaching my daughter in that way. It is such a domino effect. And this is what perplexes me. An EPA only needs to have a high school diploma.
Really?
Yeah. A teacher needs a Bachelor of Arts and a Bachelor of Education. So why are we having folks who have a high school education, which there's absolutely nothing wrong with just having that, but with that comes lack of experience, call it what it is, lack of education. So you're put in a room with the most vulnerable kids, the kids that need the most support, and you don't really have a grasp of what you're getting into. And everybody is different. You have a kid with autism. You have a kid with microcephaly. You have a kid in a motorized wheelchair that can't feed themselves, go to the bathroom on their own. There's just no way that you can come out with a high school education and be able to tackle all of that. Most teachers with a BED cannot tackle a piece of that. So it's set up to fail. This is why the EPAs are getting burnt out. They're overworked. They're underpaid. Therefore, yes, they should go on strike, but the bar needs to be raised higher. So no, I don't think it's on the EPAs. I think it's on the school system to demand a little bit more. But I think that's where it's broken, is nobody's demanding higher education for EPAs.
It's one of those things where it looks on the surface when you first look at EPAs, and you know, every child who needs one has an EPA, let's say, in a perfect world in this system. That sounds great on the surface of it. This is the first I've ever heard that high school is all you need. And again, nobody's maligning a high school education, but when you're talking about the most vulnerable students, I would have expected a lot more training than that.
Yeah.
Okay, so This is very interesting to me because, yeah, you definitely, you clearly had some thoughts written on your face when you sat down to talk about the education system.
I have many thoughts.
I'm definitely starting to see why. Okay, so is this really just, is it really just more of something where they've tried to make it look like they've solved a problem then? Because that's what it kind of sounds like to me.
This is a Band-Aid on a bullet hole.
Right.
This will happen again.
Absolutely.
And the only, you can't point fingers at the EPAs themselves. You have to point the finger at the educational system. Mm-hmm. Again, you need to raise the bar higher. It doesn't make sense to have people with lack of education, lack of experience dealing with the most vulnerable group within a school.
Yeah.
Make that make sense to me. It never has, and it never will until things change.
Yeah. Right. And you know, to take it one step further, that, you know, these EPAs that have, you know, a minimum amount of education, certainly obviously have passion, because you just don't do this job, like, unless you, you know, love to be in a helping and supporting nature. But Chelsea referred to the fact that her daughter's teacher, okay, which I find to be a bit of an oxymoron, because the teacher, okay, is really in name only, you know, that child is in that class. And this is where I see some of the panicking starting, okay, not only for the parents in this case of the strike, but even like at the school level, because the teachers, okay, would be saying to the principals, like to their school admin, if I don't have an EPA, I can't have those people in my class. Like, because here's the thing, all the students might be in the classroom, right? They might spend some time in the learning center, but they might also be in the classroom. But when they're in the classroom, their EPA is sitting there right with them, okay? And oftentimes working with them on the activity that they're doing, right? And the teacher would have little to no interaction with the student. So now all of a sudden the EPAs are going to go on strike, right? And here's this teacher, okay, who doesn't know. I mean, sure, they know the learning plan because they have to sign off on the learning plan, but they've not worked with it. They've not worked with that student, and now they're going to be responsible for that student. You're right. It's not safe, and it's not a safe place. Because now you're putting somebody responsible who doesn't have any idea, and they're going to learn on the go.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. And as Chelsea said, every student has different requirements. Well, and that seems pretty normal that we are starting to figure that out, because no two humans are exactly alike. Right. And whether you have... whether you have a disability, okay, or not, your learning style is still different. So I think this sort of brought a lot of that to the light. I'd like to think, but that's my rose-colored glasses probably on, that will force some additional change. Luckily the strike didn't last long. And probably because of some of these, let's face it, there was a lot, okay, of publicity, like a pushback, right? Not just from the parents, but at the school levels as well, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So it shows the turmoil, like, you know, that you're right. We think we've put a Band-Aid. We think we have all these titles and we can say, oh, we have a learning center. We have EPAs. We support. But do we?
And what happens if something interrupts that system? Because you're right, it is. And I can see it being difficult on a teacher who doesn't have that experience in the classroom as well. But thinking about your daughter and thinking about, you know, myself as a neurodivergent individual and how change affects me, like how does sudden change in her routine affect her? I can see that
it's
being incredibly
nightmare.
Disruptive.
Yeah. It's a nightmare, I think, for any neurodivergent person. Routine is what keeps you together. When you throw that routine off, behavior changes, just routine changes. Everything is it completely goes down the sink. It's awful. And just in the article, you know, they talked about how EPAs are the backbone of the educational system. They're the backbone because they have to be.
Right.
They're the backbone because you've appointed them to be. Shovel the shit, basically,
yeah.
to take on everything that you're either not capable of, don't have time for, and you're putting this load on people that simply do not have the capacity to do it.
Yep.
Correct.
And exactly. Then when they try
obviously
to strike
it's going
for
to fail.
What I presume, you know, most people around here strike for is something close to a living wage, then suddenly the blame gets shifted onto the EPAs. Well, look what you're doing to these children. Look mm-hmm. at the costs that you're pushing onto. In the article, they interviewed a single mother who was looking at $225 a day to have her child, to have one child supported at home.
Yeah.
While these EPAs were on strike. And it's that seems very unfair to the EPAs for certain, but the whole situation is most unfair to the students. So what's the solution? Because we can't tell somebody in any role, hey, you can't strike, but
right. And
but we can't be putting these kids in such a vulnerable position either.
No. And let's just highlight that $225 a day, right? We talk about, you know, there's another flaw in our system. We talk about the fact that school's accessible to all, like, right? And we, you know, we seem to be very proud of the fact that we've made it inclusive to all.
It's not.
Well,
no.
to say that school's going to continue... And the school board's all proud of the fact that we're going to be able to continue school even if there's a strike. Well, now school's not inclusive to all, mm-hmm. right? And now you're going to charge somebody $225 like to get an education daily, mm-hmm. okay? Like the bare minimum, right? That is some significant problems with the system, if
yep.
you will. I was thinking, you know, of Chelsea, that, you know, this has brought a lot of things to light. And I know you've been working with this in the system for many years, like with your daughter. We would have, you know, some listeners who have children that will soon be entering the school system that will need the services, will likely have some, you know, individual educational plan. What advice do you have for them?
You
had to navigate that.
You have to be your child's advocate. When my daughter started school, I let them know she had a disability. I absolutely loved her elementary school. And I should note she's in kind of a junior high now. So things have changed drastically. It's like the older that kids get, kind of the more they want to veer away from the kids. Well, they're growing up. They should know how to. No, my daughter's biologically almost 12, but is cognitively probably 5 or 6. So you have this almost, you know, 5'9" girl walking down a hallway. Yes, you're going to assume she's self-sufficient. She can figure out where the bathroom is. She can, you know, she should be able to do all this. Don't assume. So that's number one. Don't assume what kids are capable of and what they're not capable
right.
of. But my advice would be to be their advocate, because you can't put your trust within the school. You know your child best. You know what's going to work. And you have to be the one to stand up and say, I don't like that, or that's not going to work, or why are we doing this? That's the only way that it will work. So you have to fight. That's what it's been for like the past
right.
seven, eight years. It's just like fighting.
Is there anything you've seen over your time, because you've obviously been really engaged with the school system this whole time, is there anything you've seen that's actually improved, that's measurably improved in your experience during that time?
No.
I was going to say, for anyone listening, I'm not getting an optimistic look here.
No.
That's really disheartening in almost a decade that there's
been... But since she has started primary, we've constantly been towing the line between the system coddling her
mm-hmm.
and pushing her too far. It's like we can never find that sweet spot. You know, why are you opening her applesauce? She can do that.
Yeah.
Why are you opening her water bottle? She can do that. Why are you sticking her in the back of the classroom with a worksheet, giving long instructions and saying, okay, good luck, let me know if you need anything? Obviously, she can't do that. So sometimes I feel like I'm nitpicking, but I want to shake them most of the
right.
time and say, come on, like, just have some common sense or get to know her. And that's, she's either been extremely coddled or she's been set up with extremely unrealistic expectations. I get kind of, you were talking about how inclusive schools should be. I was thinking about this yesterday, and when a child is suspended from school because of behavior, you know, that's a consequence. You did something wrong. You're not allowed to come back to school. It's on your parents to figure out what's going to happen in that time.
Right.
That's exactly what's happening here. So it's making these kids, and, you know, when EPAs strike, it's making the kids and the parents feel like, oh, this is a consequence. I did something wrong. Mm-hmm. It's now on me to fill my child's time because my kid's not allowed to go back to school.
Right.
Those are not, a suspension and a strike are not the same thing.
And if you're right. feeling that as a parent, guaranteed that your child is feeling that too, that this is,
I can't go back to school and be with my peers. I can't be part of that routine because I'm not allowed to go back to school right now.
Yeah. And you're often talking about students who may have the hardest time understanding that it's not their fault.
And they can't.
Yeah.
My daughter wouldn't be able to understand. Like I said, she was able to continue going to school. Was it beneficial? I don't really think so. Mm-hmm. But she was welcome. And I have a full-time job and my husband has a full-time job. You know, we're not going to pay for childcare. Again, she's almost 11. Like, she can't go to daycare. So it puts us in a really weird position, but it's not the same. It's not a consequence to the child. And how do you explain a child with any kind of disability that this isn't on you? You can't go back to school, but this isn't on you?
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense.
You know, so I'm thinking about, you know, when you said about advocating for your child, mm-hmm. because we are talking about, like, well, first off, children are most vulnerable part of the population, coupled with, okay, children who also require support, right? Outside of just the normal parental support. This is a critical piece of, like, our education system. It's a critical piece of, you know, eventually your daughter will be an adult.
Yeah.
Right. And it's about trying to, you know, help them understand support. It feels to me like when you said that there was no improvements, that, that there's not a consistent process in the system.
There so never more has been.
Almost kind of seems like a weird thing to say, but it's like the school system needs more education what does inclusive education mean?
Yes.
So everybody's on the same page, because I feel like, you know, you might lucky in one year where you get a teacher, an EPA in the learning center, and they're all on the same mm-hmm. page. But then the next year, the child goes to another teacher who doesn't really know much about that, has to sign off yep. on it, and then just kind of lets it fall to the EPA. So then there's not really, yep. there's less supports or whatever.
And don't get me wrong. Last year, she had an amazing team because they were all on the same page. And I think we just lucked out with a really compassionate, understanding, want to know more kind of human teacher. And we still keep in touch with her to this day because she was fantastic. This year, we don't have the same thing. We don't have a teacher that, in my opinion, really cares or wants to care. You know, I've got a classroom of like 29 other kids. Three of them are on IEPs. And to go back to the topic of inclusion, my daughter being one of those three, they all sit together. Tell me that that's inclusive. Mm-hmm. So you've got all of the neurotypical kids sitting wherever they want to sit, but you're going to put the three that go to the learning center or have an EPA, they're all sitting together.
Yeah.
Spread them out. There's no goddamn reason that they need to sit together. They're still
humans.
Sure there
is. It's a nice casual way to stigmatize them for everyone and put that in the other kids' heads nice and early.
Right?
That's a horrible situation. Exactly. That really makes
but
me
again,
angry.
Again,
it sounds like a small thing, but it's not.
It's not a small
no.
thing. And I think that's what we're really coming to here. And that is the fact that we might say we're inclusive, right? It's the back to this. It's no different than workplaces where, you know, we use these buzzwords, but we're not really inclusive because not everybody's on the same page.
No.
Right? And we're not applying the same, you know, rules. I mean, even just from year to year within the same school, okay, one school in
HRCE and another school look very different as well. Okay. And then if, you know, heaven forbid, if you have to move outside of HRCE to another school board, you may have a whole other different set. Mm-hmm. Like for this in and of itself, okay, shows that like it's broken.
It is.
Right. And people aren't on the same page. It's not that I disbelieve that teachers aren't educated, right? They are obviously educated in being a teacher, right? But I don't know that they're educated in being a teacher of all mm-hmm. children. Mm-hmm. And that I think that's the key because maybe you've lucked out as a teacher, and then the first 4 years of your teaching career, okay, you've never had anybody in your classroom on an IEP, mm-hmm. right? Then all of a sudden you have three people.
Yep.
Like, what do you do if you've never had any education? There's no process for that. That is going to cause problems.
Yep.
And what do you do when you have 29, keep sticking with you. 29 kids is a lot in a classroom, especially when you have three that are on individual plans on top of that. And then it sounds like we're also missing, there's no passing along of information from year to year, even within the same school. Like, mm-hmm. And I presume the answer is the same as it always is. There's no time and no resources to do this. But if we're going to talk like this article did, we had a lot of education officials saying, you know, education is a human right. That is our policy in Nova mm-hmm. Scotia. Well, that's great. Having all the kids show up at the school, that does not mean they're all getting an education.
No.
That's very clear here. So where is the time being spent? Why isn't the time being spent having a teacher speak to the next grade up teacher when we're transitioning a child into the next level and saying, okay, this is what worked this year. This is what didn't. This is what triggers some behavior. This is what really mellows this child out. This is going to make your job much easier.
Yeah.
You're not coming in blank and scared as a teacher, but we're not shoveling everything onto the poor EPA either. We're all taking some responsibility here.
Exactly. Yep. Well, and I think that comes down to the fact that we keep riding on the fact, well, we have change. Like teachers move around, people move from positions. So we're forcing all of the continuity to be in a specific person's mind. So if the learning center teacher has all of that continuity for all the children that can be passed back and forth, that learning center teacher retires. Mm-hmm. That learning center teacher all of a sudden goes to work at a school closer to where she lives, finally got the dream job.
Yeah.
Right. You know, like all those things. All of that knowledge goes with that particular teacher. Mm-hmm. This is where I'm seeing that there's an opportunities for processes to be in place so that there is an automatic, you know, like what is that continuity of process for students as they move from one grade to another.
Mm-hmm. And they do meet and they say, this is what worked, this is what didn't work. For a neurotypical student, I think they all kind of sit round table, they give a check mark, boom, done like that. Mm-hmm. I had to do one with the learning center and the EPAs and the teacher right before school ended this year. And it was hell trying to get that meeting because you need everybody in the same room. And it's like, oh, sorry, I have a million things to do. Oh, it's end of year. I have a million. Okay. But why does this one fall to the bottom of the list?
Yeah.
Why isn't it something else?
That's my point.
And why is the onus all being put on the parent? And I'm not going to say the parent shouldn't have a level of responsibility here. Of course, every parent should. But your daughter is lucky to have parents who are very engaged with the education system, who know a bit about the inside of the system and a bit more about her particular needs. Not every child has that. We've all seen very bad situations with that. So
yeah.
If the education system is relying that much on parents to make this work even a little bit, how many kids are just getting absolutely failed from top to bottom through the system?
Right. They are. I mean, I didn't find out until a few months later that they had my daughter on Coffee Cart, which is like a student, like two students go around and they sell coffee to the teachers. She was watching movies every day. She was like going in with the grade one and the grade primaries to basically like sit with them and not even read with them, but just to like hang out and like help them get their boots on, which is fine. But like, why why is she not learning anything? Mm-hmm. You know, like, I'm all for social skills, and I told them social skills need to be improved, but like, coffee cart and movies every day, like, that, this is a daycare. You're basically giving me free daycare, which I don't want. I want her to learn something. It just goes back to the standard that we have for EPAs. They're never consistent. That turnover rate, I can't even tell you what that looks like. It is astronomical.
Exactly.
As soon as they're in the door, they're out the door, and they have to hire a new one. And that one's like, oh God, I didn't know what I was getting myself into. Out the door, in the door.
Mm. Right.
Until that changes, there's not going to be any continuity.
Right. Yes. Which isn't going to change, of course, until we have, from the sounds of it, a massive investment, not just in paying these people proper wages to keep them around longer, but in education and training. You cannot have someone fresh out of high school thrown into this system. Mm-hmm. They need to be prepared better than that.
Absolutely. And, you know, not even, you know, obviously some fresh out of high school, but I've seen older EPAs, 40s and their 50s, that haven't worked in this field throughout their adult life. There's only so much you can do with a high school diploma. So they're working those level jobs, and then an EPA position comes up. Oh, sweet. I get summers off. Boom. I'll apply to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oops.
Just gotta call it like it is.
Overwhelmed.
That's exactly what it is. Yeah.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. So we're getting close to the end of our time here. As a parent who's been through this for almost a decade now, and as someone who has strong, legitimate feelings, which I appreciate on the podcast every week, if we could ask you, what would be three changes that you think would improve the situation for your daughter in the Nova Scotia education system right now?
Mm-hmm. And I think I've already kind of talked about them. One is raising the, you know, having a higher standard for EPAs, education and pay. Number two would be for teachers and the learning center to have a better investment in that child's learning, getting to know that child a little bit more and not just kind of placing them in that miscellaneous category that all children with disabilities in the school system seem to be placed in. Mm-hmm. And number three would just be for parents to continue that open line of communication. Don't back down. Let the school know I'm not going anywhere. That's worked in my favor. I've had to stand up and raise my voice a couple of times, but you get heard, and that's when you start to see change.
Is there any kind of grouping or association for parents who are facing these kind of issues if their children are on the individualized education plans, or no?
Not that I know of.
That would be very interesting to see, like a parent-teacher sort of separate for people who really need to be in there making a little extra change for their children. But I mean, again, it's also more responsibility on the parents. So.
I've certainly, you know, I have a couple of friends that are in the same position that I am with their kids. And, you know, we kind of band together and like, oh, good job. I'm glad you did that. Or, you know, hey, you should try this next time. We kind of have our own little secret underground club.
Yeah.
But nothing public.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay.
And there used to be, you know, to that point, there used to be student advisory. It's like the parent advisory committees, like for each school. And then they did away with those when they rebranded to the Centers for Education instead of the boards. But I see that they're bringing those back in some areas. Now, some have been brought back for specific focus groups on they're building a new school and they're getting putting together a student advisory. But I think they're hearing more and more, that we need to have the parents, you know, input as to what's happening in this school. Mm-hmm. And if that comes back, and maybe there is some advocacy, like on parents' behalf to force that to come back, then it would allow parents like Chelsea, to sit on that committee to make sure, that always the topic of inclusive education is being considered in whatever topic we talk about. We're going to have a school fair. Okay, well, what happens to the kids that are inclusive? Mm-hmm. Right?
I think the thing that you said that stuck with me the most, Chelsea, is just to get to know, for the teacher to get to know your child, spend a little more time. I think that's not just for children, too, with disabilities of any kind in the school, but just not only how every kid learns differently too, but I saw a woman speaking yesterday and she was talking about the things she wished her teachers had known about her in school. And she was Korean American. She said, for one thing, I wish the teachers had learned that the other Korean American girl in my class who looked nothing like me was not me, because for the entire year we got each other's tests back, no matter how many times we said something about it. So yeah, getting to know the children in your class for a number of different reasons sounds like a struggle, unfortunately. I think it comes back to numbers, but there are some teachers out there.
Getting to know and stop taking pity. That's one thing that I've run into that drives me absolutely nuts, is just because she has a disability doesn't mean you need to get down on your knees and talk to her like a little girl. No. She's still a human, and she's still, you know, biologically 11 years old. Let's talk to her like she's 11 years old, and let's not, again, put her in that miscellaneous category because she doesn't act like the rest of the classroom. You don't need to take pity on her.
No. Having met her very briefly a few times, she's a tough, resilient, charming kid.
She kind of has to be.
Yeah, exactly. I can see where that's coming from. But also, I would like to think that some teachers would see and recognize that and, you know, kind of encourage what's already there when they're helping to do what they're supposed to be doing, building skills for her future.
Yeah. I would love to see that. But the majority of the teachers have either kind of written her off or been like, oh, special little project, because she's a special little girl.
Special, our favorite word around these parts. Okay. Exactly. Well, before I start swearing in response to the word special, as I usually do, why don't we call it there while we're still being semi-polite?
It's time to bring the voice of reason. That's me.
We talked about this before we started podcasting today, actually. You are the one that calls us back.
Yeah, exactly. I'm the one who stops the podcast just before.
Just before I haul my soapbox out.
Just before you have to get the buzzer out. Beep, beep, beep. Anyway, this was a very good topic to talk about today, because I think we often talk about on the podcast, we're talking about, you know, a variety of different things that come up, but they all tend to talk about like the workplace. And I think, well, obviously the school is the workplace, but we're actually talking about a different bit of inclusivity at the parent child school level. And I think that was very interesting for our viewers to hear, or viewers, our listeners.
Yeah. Okay, so we finished our podcast and then we've come back because we got talking as we always do. But no, I wanted to talk because we talked about how resilient your daughter is, and this is just a great story to show that, but to also show that there are big gaps outside of the school building too in the system that where kids are being let down. So why don't you tell, Shelley, I don't think has heard this story, so
no,
why don't
I
you
haven't.
Tell Shelley about your daughter's big bus school bus adventure.
So my daughter started at a junior high this year and has started taking the bus. So, you know, we did a couple dry runs. This is where your bus stop is. This is where you're going to get on. Da, 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 da. We never really used the term school bus or big yellow bus. We just kept saying bus. Her bus stop happens to be at a Metro Transit stop as well. The Metro Transit bus.
Oh, Lord.
The Metro Transit bus shows up before the school bus does. She's on her own. Well, she's with a group of kids and, you know, she sees a bus pull up. She's pumped because this is her first time taking the bus. So she gets on the Metro Transit, not on the school bus. Metro Transit driver, not sure what he was on that day, didn't think to question her, didn't think to say anything. You know, he sees a group of kids standing at, you know, waiting for a school bus, but lets her on anyways. I didn't know until after the fact that kids under 12 ride the bus for free.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So she gets on the bus. She has a tile, kind of like an air tag in her backpack, so we can track where she is. And we get a call from the school. Is Harper with you? Because we don't have her yet. I'm like, oh, well, she's now a bus student. Maybe she's a little bit late. Okay. All of the buses are here. We're going to take a look around the property. So now I'm starting to get a little bit worried. I go home. We're looking around the house. No Harper. She's obviously not at the bus stop. School calls again. It's been an hour. By protocol, we have to call the police. So we're starting to panic. We get in the car. We start driving around our city. I'm going to every school within our vicinity. Maybe the bus went to the wrong school. There's no Harper. I'm grabbing kids. I'm shaking them. I'm looking at their faces like, where's my kid? And Chris tries to track the tile. Again, we don't know that tiles only bounce off of like Bluetooth or other tiles, so it doesn't really work like an AirTag. So we see the tile around the rotary, kind of in the water. And I'm like, somebody has her, intrusive thoughts. They took her backpack, they threw it out the window. Every possible worst thought you can think of. Anyways, we take a deep dive, and there is surveillance of her at the Mumford Road terminal, getting a transfer and getting onto another bus. So this is now like two bus drivers that have been like, oh, little girl with a backpack on. Yeah, get on the Metro Transit. But also
that little girl using the transit system better than a lot of adults I've seen on their first time trying to use it.
She got a transfer.
Oh, she got a transfer. Yeah.
My kid has never been on a public bus.
She obviously saw somebody else getting a transfer. Right? Yeah. So she's like, okay,
that's how that works.
I get a transfer and get on another bus because there's no school here.
Yep. So yeah, somebody else did it. I'll get a transfer, gets on the bus. Police are called. We're all in a panic. Okay, at least we've seen her on a bus. We have a very good friend who is a police officer, and he calls and he says, I hear your daughter's missing. And I'm like, yep, freaking out. And he said, don't worry, I'll find her. As calm as that. I'm like, hey, whatever, man. Like, I can't deal with this right now. Anyways, fast forward a couple of hours later, he finds her down on Barrington Street. We live in Spryfield. She's downtown on Barrington Street. And, you know, he says her name. You know who I am. Get my police car. We're going to take you home. All that to say, there is no protocol for kids. I mean, there is Accessibus. But that doesn't take you to school. Mm-hmm. There's no protocol for kids with cognitive disabilities. She's not in a wheelchair. Yeah. She's not in crutches. There's no mobility issues.
Right.
She looks like your neurotypical 11-year-old child.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But she's not. And so people, I think, they assume too quickly.
Yeah.
Oh, but why the hell would an 11-year-old get on a Metro Transit bus at 7:30 in the morning.
Exactly.
Yeah. Gaps in adult logic aside, though, like, she learned a ton that morning. She did so well.
She's very resilient. It was maybe the best education she got all year.
I'm
going
to tell you right now, neither of my parents who were in their 70s could function on the bus system in the way that she did that morning.
I couldn't.
I was very impressed. So, no, I think she...
And was she worried, like, when she got home?
I met her at the door crying, so I think she was like, oh, shit. Well, yeah, I worried mom. So I think she was a bit worried, too. But I think knowing her, she was probably like, what is going on? Like, where am I? Probably just, like, more enamored with everything that was around her rather than, like,
she kept trying
I should
to figure
be at school right
this,
now.
This bus ride seems to be a long process to get me to school.
This is what I have to do every day.
You're going to have to watch her the first day of every school year. She's probably going to be like, school or adventure, school. Or adventure.
Right. Yeah.
Which one today?
And the police officers kept saying, did you guys get in a fight? Does she hate school? And I'm like, this kid, I could say what I want about the school system.
Yeah.
She's a social butterfly and she loves school. I'm like, no, she loves school. It's not a headache to get her to go to school. This is not her trying to get out of going to school. This is a big mistake.
Yeah.
What happened?
Now, looking back, because it's always easy to look back, like she was at the bus stop with a bunch of other kids, okay, who saw her get on the bus.
Didn't say a word.
Right? Yeah. Didn't say a word. Didn't go to school and say, Harper, got on the Metro Transit bus. Like, nobody told anybody, all along the way. Like, there were so many times where things could have happened, right?
There were many opportunities.
Nobody was most helpful that day, except for your police officer friends.
Except for my cop
friend. The Metro Transit driver, who picks her up, first day of school, sees a bunch of kids standing there. Only one of them gets on the bus. Mm-hmm. Like, to me, that would have been the moment to say, are you supposed to be on the school bus?
Yeah.
The only reason,
I realize some kids travel outside of their area, right?
But not at No, not when you're with a group of other kids.
And when you ask on the first day of school, because so many kids are confused about buses and stuff like that, right?
And I know Metro Transit gets a lot of flack, but I have to give it to them. The police told me, you know, when it comes to, not these kind of situations, because I don't think they happen often, but when there's missing children, the Metro Transit are often one of the first notified. And they take it very seriously. If a call is put out, they immediately pull over. They immediately like take a kind of surveillance of the bus to see if any child fits the description. And that's how that happened.
Okay.
They said, you know, there's this 11-year girl. She's wearing a green dress with a purple jacket over it. And that bus driver pulled over on Barrington Street, stood up, took a look around and said, you fit the description. You come with me.
I'm glad that happened at that point. I know there's no onus on the kids in this story or on the bus drivers in this story. Story to be looking out for someone like that, aside from social responsibility.
Know,
that would be
exactly.
a little nice. So,
yeah.
All right, listeners, try to do something nice, like pay a little bit of attention there in the world. If you see a child on their own, maybe question that.
I think it's a really good learning lesson that not everybody, okay, that has some disability, okay. They're not all visible. Mm-hmm. Like, as you said, your daughter, 5'9", mm-hmm. she's taller than me, mm-hmm. okay? And I am far older than her.
Wait, right? 5'9"?
She's 5'10". She's like 5'8". Yeah.
And would have got on, would have presented as like a teenager even.
Yeah.
Okay. And nobody would think twice about that, right? Like, we make assumptions that, you must know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Right? So again,
be curious, ask a polite question. This is the things we talk about all the time, right? Just be curious and ask politely. It's not offensive, and you might really save a mom's sanity some mm-hmm. morning out there. Mm-hmm.
So true.
I'm so glad you came back to tell that. Thank you for that. I love that story. Thank you for listening. Thanks for listening to Within Our Reach. We'll be back in 2 weeks with our next episode. If you have an idea for an episode topic you'd like us to cover, or if you'd like to join us as a guest on the podcast, reach out to us at withinourreach@reachability.org.